Okay, if you ever learned Maseches Parah, so I guess your lesson is you should get to the Shiva house earlier than the last day, because that's what's left on the last day. No? Do people learn it for other than a Shloshim? I guess you should. You should learn Maseches Parah at some point, for real also. But if you ever learned Maseches Parah, you may notice that there are many chumras associated with the procedure of Parah Aduma that are literally unparalleled in Hukhustam of Atara, that you never find anywhere else. Just to give but one example, in order to ensure that the water that was used for the Parah Aduma, for the Mechatos, not have any question relating to its Tahara, so the Mishnayos describe how they would take pregnant women to a cliff with a significant overhang, and they would deliver the babies on that cliff and raise them there, because it was a quarantined environment of absolute Tahara. Meaning, normally you walk around, who knows, maybe there's a dead body buried right under where I'm walking. But if you're in a cliff, that's a rocky cliff, where you can't bury any bodies in that cliff, and even if there's bodies in the ground beneath it, but there's an ohel in between, the cliff is an overhang, so it would be mafsik bifnei atuma, and therefore anyone who's walking on the top of the cliff is going to be tahar. So they would take pregnant women, have them have their babies on that cliff, raise their babies on that cliff. No trips, no Chalamoi trips, no Yankee Stadium, no Bronx Zoo, no Disney World, nothing, right? Staying on that cliff, that's their entire world for the first several years of their life. And then, when they were old enough, they were ready to go draw the water from the Parah Aduma, and they would ride on the backs of animals. And according to one opinion, they had like a delus, like a large board on the back of the animal to also catch any tumma, to be an ohel over any tumma. And then they would lower a bucket over the side to draw the water, to bring the water, because we have to make sure that we are absolutely, absolutely certain that the child is tahar when he's drawing the water for the Parah Aduma. And even when they were doing that, they had to not make sure they don't stick their hands in the buckets, just in case they had somehow become tameh. Right? That's the din. Where do we ever take such extreme measures to ensure a level of tahara? It's totally, meaning what happened to Rove, what happened to Chazaka, what happened to, there was no Leidas HaSafek, that there's no Reyusa, none of that. We just say you have to do all of this in order to ensure the tahara process. And there are many other chumras associated with Parah Aduma as well. Question is why? Why do we have so many chumras associated with Parah Aduma? So it's not my question. The Gemara raises the issue. The Gemara in Yuma Daf Beis explains that we observe all of these chumras in order to counter one major kula that's associated with Parah Aduma. Right? Sometimes you have a whole set of chumras to counterbalance a kula. Right? In Hilchos Nida, you have a whole set of archakos in order to counterbalance a heter yichud. That you're allowed to be yichud with ishto nida, so we have to have all of these archakos. So there was one major kula, and that was that we allow a Kohen Tvul Yom to perform the procedure. That even though his Tahara process is not completed, he went to the mikvah, but he didn't have Harav Shemesh yet, we allow him to be involved in the Parah Aduma. So lest you think that we just don't care about Tumah and Tahara of Parah Aduma, we go to crazy extremes to ensure the Tahara of Parah Aduma. But it's not just that a Tvul Yom is allowed to do the Parah Aduma procedure. The Chachamim insisted that it only be performed by a Tvul Yom. Nobody else was allowed to do the Parah Aduma. And the rabbis did this because tzedukim were particularly machmir in this area. The tzedukim held that a Tvul Yom is possible to be involved with the Mechatas, and that you absolutely needed Harav Shemesh. So in order, lahotzi milibin shel tzedukim, to show that the tzedukim are wrong, and that we're loyal to the way our chachamim understand the Dinim in the Torah, we dafka have a Tvul Yom do it, but once we're dafka having a Tvul Yom do it, then we have to counterbalance that with all of these chumras. In fact, the Tosefta in the third parak of Parah records an incident where Tzduki Kohen Gadol Bizman Bayesheni had his Tevila and procrastinating from bringing the Parah Aduma so that he wouldn't have to do it while he was a Tvul Yom. He wanted to wait till he had Harav Shemesh. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai got wind of what he was doing. He went over to him, he leaned his hand on the Tzduki Kohen Gadol's head, and he said, "You're a nice fellow, but now you're also Tameh, because I just made you Tameh by leaning on you." So Mazel Tov. And the Kohen Gadol vowed revenge on Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, and Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai said, "Sure, next time you see me, you're welcome to take revenge on me." And the Stuki died 3 days later and never again saw Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. I mean, stories like that tell you, they're meant to demonstrate that this was a serious point of contention. This issue of a Tvul Yom, yes, Tvul Yom, no, wasn't just Stam. This was like a major point of contention between the Tzedukim and the Chachamim. But the question begs itself, like, why was this one issue such a hot-button issue to the point that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is purposely mitame the kohanim, or invested in performing the procedure, and that we always do that, we insist on that, and only a tevul yom can do it. That's not the halacha. The halacha is a tevul yom can do it, and a tevul yom must do it just to show. And why did the Stukim care so much about this? You know, Stukim, it's true, most of the things Stukim did were chumras, not kulas, but still, why did they care so much about this? So Nevin Sal and his sichas suggest that the Stukim worked extra hard to ruin our performance of Paraduma, because Paraduma represents the tikkun for the Chele Ega. Right? Rashi quotes from the Chazal, Tavo imav t'kaneach al bina, let the mother come and clean up after the child. The Chele Egel represents the very root and the basis, apparently, of all Tzduki Hashkafa in some way. And the Paraduma is meant to fix that, problem. The Tzdukim, by Dafka, you know, putting their flag down on Paraduma, are saying, we don't want Paraduma to accomplish what the Chacham think it should accomplish. We want the Chele Egel to be in place, to not be erased. What's the connection between the Stukim and the Chele Egel? The Chele Egel clearly should not be understood at the simplest level, only that the Jewish people literally believed that the gold they'd been wearing in their ears, just or in their noses or on their wrists just hours earlier, were, you know, Eile Elohech Yisrael, that Hotzisicha Meretz Mitzrayim. They really believed that. It's hard to imagine. That they, you know, that wouldn't be rishos. That wouldn't only be rishos. That would be ein shtos gadol mizeh. It'd be a bunch of shotim to believe that. Instead, the Chele Egel is much more likely to have been along the lines of what several of the rishonim explain, and the Kuzari writes that the loss of Moshe Rabbeinu symbolized the loss of their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he was the one that connected them to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and in search of another intermediary, they chose to make an egel. Now, the very concept that you'll have a golden, molten image being a makom hashras hashchina is not like so out of the ordinary for us. We just finished not that long ago Sefer Shmos, and the makom hashras hashchina is mibein shnei hakruvim. It's a golden, molten image that serves as the basis, as the makom of the hashras hashchina. Their mistake of choosing a calf is even not as unusual as it sounds, because one of the faces on the Merkava, which apparently they had seen at Maimed Har Sinai, was the Shor, the Pnei Ashar. So they figured it would be their mazel, and therefore it's a good idea to use it, meaning nothing about the Chele Egel is so different. Even the fact that they panicked and that they completely freaked out when Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't there is also somewhat understandable. They were people who had no idea where they were going in the desert. Their guide was Moshe Rabbeinu, and now he was gone. Imagine being in the middle of a scary desert with, you know, I don't know, a family, young family, a wife and young children, and you don't have ways, you know, because you're in the desert and it doesn't have a reception or whatever, you have no idea where you're going. And to make matters worse, they didn't know that the Mun was going to continue, or the Be'er would continue, or anything was going to continue without Moshe Rabbeinu. Maybe all that was only in the mind of Moshe Rabbeinu. And in the back of their minds, they're thinking, if Hashem took Moshe Rabbeinu, he must have done something wrong. And even he got punished. What's going to be with us? So the panic is understandable. That's not why they were punished so severely, says Rav Nevinson. The reason they were punished so severely was on account of one simple mistake. Before taking leave, Moshe Rabbeinu was careful to make sure that there was a mechanism for a new leader in place. He did not leave the people high and dry. He specifically instructed them, "V'hine Aharon v'chur imachem mi bal dvarim yigash aleihem." I am not leaving you as a Dor Yosom without leaders. I am leaving you with people who you can seek Eitza from, or you can seek guidance from. Aaron V'chur Ar Imachem. There's not going to be a void in leadership. It's a terrible mistake when leaders don't make clear who the next leaders ought to be. Remember, Rav Shachter discussing once that one of the things he's proudest of Yesh Ladin, whether this is like 100% true, but he said one of the things that he's proudest of is that he said, if I'm not the Rosh Kollel, I have 10 Talmidim that could be the Rosh Kollel in the yeshiva. Meaning, I have Talmidim that I trained to be Roi Lekach, that they could also be the Rosh Kollel in the yeshiva. Hopefully he's not going anywhere. You know, we need him. But that's leadership. So Moshe Rabbeinu, he left them with Aaron and Hur. There wasn't going to be a void. But instead, what did they do? They killed Hur and they forced Aaron into going along with their plan. Because if Aaron didn't go along with their plan, then they'd kill Naviv Kohen, Biyom Echer, and there would be no coming back from that. That was their sin. They had a serious religious problem. They were lost, which is understandable. And instead of consulting with Torah leadership, they took their own approach. And that's the root of Tzeduki Hashkafa. The idea that the Chachmei Yisrael and the Chazal are of no use to them. That the way we understand the Torah Shebichsav, with ignoring a Mesorah of Torah Shebaal Peh, ignoring the way the Chacham through the generations have interpreted it, we could do it all on our own. Rav Schwab explains that when Rashi says, Ma kala miskashetas be'esrim v'arba kishutin, af tam l'chacham tzarech lios baki be'esrim v'arba svarim, right, a beautiful Maimer Chazal, that just like that a Talmud Chacham has to be miskashit with all Chavdalit Sifrei Tanakh. He's supposed to know all Chavdalit Sifrei Tanakh. Just like a Kala that's miskashit with Chavdalit with Kishutin. And says Rosh Rab, just such a beautiful aura. He says, and what if a person is not a Kala and is miskashetas b'Chavdalit Kishutin? What do you call such a woman? A Zona. Meaning, a kala should get all dressed up and all sits and have a makeup lady. What if every day a woman had a makeup lady and the fanciest jewelry and whatever else and was trying to draw it? So then she's just Tamazona. A Talmud Chacham should be miskashetas with Chav Talit Sifrei Tanakh. But if that's all he's got, and he doesn't also have the Masorah of the Torah Shebaal Peh, he studies the 24 books, but it's not based on Torah Shebaal Peh, that's a Tzeduki. Without the Chachmei Masorah, the Bible scholar's a Zona. And that's why they specifically wanted to undermine the Paraduma, and specifically the one Drashas Chazal, to shape the way we observe Paraduma. The Tzedukim fought with all their energy against the Kapara for the Egel, and have a specific Hakpada not to trust Chazal in the matter of the Paraduma. So the message is one that we talk a lot about here in Yeshiva, that we have a Masorah. We're very, very fortunate to have a Masorah. And when we're faced with any sort of religious question, any sort of hashkafic issue, any sort of suffix about, you know, how to handle the world, so Baruch Hashem, we have Chachmei HaMasorah for guidance and for support. And taking it into our own hands, and this is something that's very important for people to learn when you're in yeshiva, and to remember after you leave yeshiva. A lot of times there's a tendency that we've spoken about in the past, that a guy learns nicely in yeshiva, he gets his smicha, and he goes to some place, and he becomes the Rosh Kabahag of that some place, and he's the smartest guy around. He's more knowledgeable than all the other people in town. They think that he's the Gadol Dar, because he knows the difference between a Ches in Rashi's script and an Aleph in Rashi's script. He's such a Talmud Chacham, such a genius. And after a while, he starts to convince himself that he's such a genius. And that he doesn't need hadracha, and that he doesn't need any guidance from Gedolei Torah. What separates the Chachamim from the Tzedukim, and the reason why we make such a big deal about Parah, and perhaps the enduring message for us of Parah, is that we have a tradition to uphold, and that tradition is upheld by properly appreciating the Chachmei HaMasorah. Okay.